Hi guys, today we have a very special guest interview with Nicole Ruiz, the founding director of a climate organization called the $5 Project, and she leads independent research on climate anxiety. Today we're actually going to be discussing climate anxiety. Nicole, can you tell us more about your environmental past and why you're interested in this topic?
So I think I've always been very passionate or I think afraid about climate change because I live in Miami. So it's very prevalent here, like through the heat waves and through the hurricanes and like a lot of things that aren't natural to be happening so frequently. So once I got into high school, I was able to explore climate change a little bit more through like the scientific and the social aspect. And then I had the opportunity to kind of expand on these subtopics of climate change, which is why I became interested in climate anxiety, because I myself feel it a lot and I want to see how like this phenomenon or like this crisis is affecting others.
Okay, that's really great. And just for our viewers who don't know what climate anxiety is, what is climate anxiety? Why are we so plagued by it? And how much are we affected by it, like as a society as a whole?
So climate anxiety is essentially a fear of the future or fear of the present regarding climate change. So like fearing if we're even going to have a future, or being scared that our home is going to be underwater in 50 years. So it's really prevalent to a lot of people, especially youth, because we are aware of the impact and the danger that climate change poses on us. So it's kind of like we're informed of this threat and we feel like it's inevitable. So if it's going to happen, we're going to be afraid of it because we know that it's going to like displace millions of people and it's going to harm us. And honestly, there's a lot of research going on about like who is specifically affected by it the most, but I think a lot of people have agreed that the generation or like the age range that feels it most is younger people, because they know that their lives will be the lives that have to first off like completely deal with climate change and are gonna experience the worst impacts of it. So yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like climate change seems like a sort of looming and existential doom in the background. And it's like a touch point for an apocalypse, but it's real and it's getting closer and closer to our timeline. And there is not that much time to comprehend the enormity of climate change, because it's such a huge aspect that affects us in our everyday lives in so many ways that a lot of us don't even realize it, but it negatively impacts all of us, and it negatively impacts some minorities disproportionately as well. So because there's so little time, especially in the Western world and the United States, where there's sort of a rush culture, it's hard to do anything about it or comprehend the enormity of it. So what are your thoughts on this sort of existentialism, and how can climate anxiety contribute to the everyday stresses of people in both a local and a global way?
So I think a really big issue that we're experiencing now is a lot of the information that we do hear, a lot of the media that we do consume that is related to climate change propagates a lot of like climate anxiety in a non-constructive way. Like it's kind of like, oh, we are doomed, like we are gonna die, and those things tend to turn people away from trying to create action on climate change, and then just make them avoid it. And that's like another concept, which is like climate apathy and climate denial. It's like when you're so afraid of something and you know that it's a threat and you aren't given like the tools of action that you can use to like make an impact, or you feel like you can't make an impact, a lot of people tend to just become apathetic towards it, or just like acknowledge like, yes, I can't do anything about it, so I'm not even gonna try. So it definitely is very real, and I think a lot of people in our society tend to go that way because it's either easier, like saying like, oh, we're just gonna die anyway, or like just saying it's like there's nothing we can do. Those are very, I think, like pessimistic thoughts that in any other movement in our history of humanity have never worked and have always limited productivity and progress. So I think it's really important that people who do experience these things in our society, because there's so many of them, really try to change their perspective, because at the end of the day, climate change is an issue that we cause. So that means there are ways of us fixing it, but it's not something that we see that has immediate results, like, oh, okay, I recycled, like now the ozone layer should be like completely healed. It's like, it's gonna take generations of change. And I think for a lot of people, it's really difficult to come to terms with that, because climate change is still going to be happening.
You mentioned this sort of idea of generations of change, as if though climate change is a continuous working action, which I completely agree with. But there's also, it also feels like it's imminent, like something needs to be done now, right? Like we can't hand this off to the next generation as previous generations have done. So like, does this time slot and deadline create more anxiety? And because of it, how does it especially affect anxiety among younger demographics compared to older demographics?
Yeah, definitely. So yes, it definitely, this idea that like our time is running down before like an ecological tipping point is really scary, I think, for most of us who hear that fact, because a lot of people in the environmental movement or who know about climate change and like the dangers and I think the obstacles that the climate movement faces, recognize that change has been and progress has been very, very slow because of the like corporations and like the people who are in power who refuse to listen because they themselves are climate deniers or apathetic towards this change, either because they are older or because they think they have the money to protect themselves. So yeah, it is a very real fear, and I think people who are experiencing the most, as I said before, are younger people, because they're the people who are going to be living in climate change and like the environmental disasters that it causes the longest. And also, like every coming year, we're having more scientific data and reports that are coming back to us that are essentially reporting that they were right all along, that the scientists who are saying, you know, we only have a certain amount of time before we have an ecological tipping point that we may not be able to come back from happens, like it's becoming more and more confirmed. So it's like having that idea that like, oh damn, this is actually happening, and also thinking like, but people still aren't taking this seriously, creates like this, it triggers this really strong fear of what is my future gonna look like.
Yeah, so you mentioned a lot of apathy and sort of climate nihilism when you were talking about that sort of deadline and the insistence to recognize that, hey, that's not gonna happen, that's for the future, right? So with this climate nihilism, when people are trying to come to terms with the direction the world is heading in, they're sort of like, well, the world's gonna end it anyways and we can't stop it now, or as you mentioned before with the rich people, well, we're rich enough to stop it, climate change won't kill us all, right? Or it'll kill everyone else, but we'll be fine. So how do these sorts of thoughts and trying to come with terms with the direction the world is heading in, how does it affect the way people view climate change? I know you already mentioned it, but how does it really affect the way people view climate change and the progress we have made as a society in combating climate change?
I think any sort of thought that says or is like very pessimistic or defeatist about climate change, like saying like, we can't do anything about it, it's just gonna happen, this sucks, scary, whatever, bye. They're very negative and they're very unconstructive, because everyone, no one, or at least no one should be denying the fact that they have fear about climate change, especially if you're in the climate movement and you see like the environmental disasters that are happening with oil companies, or like the shoot in emissions that we have even after a year of pandemics. It's it, or 2 years of pandemic, it's really scary. But it's really important to acknowledge that fear, because it, I think in a sense, it kind of unites everyone. It's like, okay, we're all really scared, but we need to transform this like energy into productivity and action, because the other choice is just admitting that it happens, not doing anything about it, putting other people down by encouraging them to not do anything, and then slowing, like dramatically slowing the rate of progress that we're trying to achieve. So it's definitely really harmful when people come with these defeatist ideas about climate change, because in the end, I think something a lot of people don't realize is that you're going to be scared when something happens to you, and you could have had the chance to protect yourself like through advocacy and pressuring climate action. And if it's not you, if you say that you don't care about yourself, it's your family and it's your neighbors. And it's, I think it's very unfair to claim and plead like inaction because you don't want to do anything about it, without thinking about the rest of the world and the rest of the communities who are trying to survive and who do want to live a good life. So yeah, it's definitely very harmful.
So with this action, do you think individual action can alleviate the stresses of climate change? And how can others who aren't currently doing much about climate change, or who feel the effects of climate anxiety, how can they be directed towards feeling less stressed about climate change?
I think first off, individual action is extremely important, because I think a lot of people, especially people who are very pessimistic about climate change, say like, oh, me, you know, getting a straw isn't gonna matter, or like, me throwing this plastic bag, like, and I'm not throwing it in the trash, I'm just throwing it on the street, is not gonna matter. And that's a really like very extensive phenomenon that happens, or not phenomenon, but like just concept that happens. That's called the tragedy of the commons, where it's like, if everyone thinks that they are not doing a huge environmental impact by doing one thing, like dropping the straw or dropping the bag or buying a bag, and the almost 8 billion people on our planet do that, that's like 8 billion straws or 8 billion plastic bags being thrown into the environment, or some action like that, you know. And this is happening every day where people are thinking this way, and it's really dangerous because it comes to inaction as well, you know. It's like, oh, I'm not gonna do anything, like I can't control a corporation who's like continuously having oil spills in like the Gulf of Mexico, or like I can't do these things. But I think what people fail to realize is that the most important action that comes, which is creating a movement, happens from the power of your own home. It's like having those difficult conversations with climate deniers in your family, in your neighborhood, and with your friends. It's about posting things, it's about showing up to civic events and protesting and voting for the right people who you know are going to make a change. Because when one person does it, you might think it's not enough, but if thousands, millions of people do that same action, you're creating a social movement, you're creating a pressure that a lot of officials who are responsible for not acting on climate change are going to feel. And that's what we're trying to get at. We're trying to create a pressure that is telling officials like, hey, we know that you're not doing what you're supposed to, and we're gonna vote you out, or we're gonna change this if you're not doing your work. And that goes for any environmental issue and like the people like who are held accountable behind it. So yeah, I definitely think that it's really important to combat this inaction by motivating people to continue, you know, like implementing climate justice, climate action, and sustainable practices into their own lives, because ultimately that's how like all of these actions combined are going to help create this movement of change.
So this idea of individual action eventually leading to collective action, right? is that if millions of individuals do this one thing, then as a whole, they'll be making a greater impact, right? But following this, is it still better to rely on corporate action as they have most of the funds and resources, the disparity of wealth leans towards them, and they're the ones that are creating most of the climate change? Is it better to rely on them and to pressure corporations and governments to take action through individual action? Like, is that?
I think it's more like, first off, I think a lot of people have agreed that we cannot trust corporations to do what they're told. Like, oh my gosh, there was this post I saw on, like, I don't even know how I got on my Instagram, or maybe I like just searched up the BP, or no, it was Exxon. I searched up Exxon's like Instagram page. And it was like, I think it was Earth Day, and they had posted like, oh, happy Earth Day. Like, these are the steps that we're taking to like do something. Like, it was something ridiculous where it's like, you are so blatantly greenwashing your product and your company, and so many people are falling victim for it because they just don't know. So corporations, especially those that rely on climate change and like the triggers of it to create revenue and to increase their revenue, can definitely not be trusted when it comes to actually solving climate change, because the last thing they want is to lose money, and losing money means fighting climate change because they see no other way around like oil and gas. So I think a big thing that the environmental movement is trying to push is this idea that we need systemic change. We need to achieve and create environmental justice in marginalized communities that have been historically oppressed by people in power, by gas companies, by imperialists, by colonists, because that way we're able to equitably create solutions together, and no one country or not one community is left behind in trying to find sustainable solutions. And in that, we also have to protect people's culture and not come in this way being like, I know what to do, you don't, this is what you have to do. But finding ways of having sustainable practice within their own lifestyle and community. But with that being said, as I said, systemic change is the most important, because the way that our country, in a lot of countries that have a lot more economic and political power, we have a linear growth mindset. So we think, oh, the only way that we're going to get better and that we're going to have more wealth, or that we're going to have a happier life, is that if we increase in economy, like, an increase in revenue also means an increase in resource consumption and an increase in exploitation of humans and an increase of unsustainable practice. So it's really dangerous for our society to have this linear mindset in a world where resources are finite, which is why it's so important to push a systemic change that both comes from individual actions, like in your own community, but also on the government level, where both sides are raising awareness and implementing measures that ensure that we are not living unsustainably in all facets of life. Because, I think a lot of times, like, we associate economic growth in a community to like, oh, they're building a new building or a new airport, or they're going to create like more tracks of this. And then I think a lot of people fail to just stop and think like, is this a direction that is going to propagate sustainable growth if we're trying to create an airport that is bringing a lot of pollution? Or should we be investing this money, this time, this energy into more systemic measures that can really tackle the root of the environmental issues that we're finding?
So how specifically can this collective whole or collective group pressure governments to take systemic action and take action? And how can a comprehensive view of climate change add to or subtract from our climate anxiety? Because for me personally, if I know someone else is feeling the same way that I do, someone else understands the background that I have, and we both have a common goal. So if both of us work together, we can have a greater impact. So how does this comprehensive view affect others? How do you think?
So to answer your first question, I think a group can take action, I guess, like systemically through the government, as you were asking, by voting, by making sure that you know who you're voting for, and you're not just voting for them because, oh, they're the lesser of two evils, but because you're really thinking, like, is this person someone that is going to be held accountable when they're not doing their work? And are they promising, like, tangible and aggressive action towards climate change now, instead of saying, like, oh, or like if they have a history of doing their work and actually doing what they promise on doing. And I think another big fact is, like, joining social movements, like joining organizations that are advocating for climate justice, because when you join an organization or a group of people who, you know, are trying to pressure for the same type of policy as you, you really start to get motivated, and you really have a really big impact on the people that you're targeting and the people that you're pressuring to change. So I think this comprehensive view of climate change, like thinking, okay, a lot of people also have climate anxiety, like I'm not alone. I know that channeling my fears into productive action are what's going to combat climate change. It's not denying climate change and pretending like it doesn't happen. I think having that sort of understanding really helps people, or should help a lot of people understand that they have the power to do something, and that they shouldn't waste that opportunity, because there's a lot of people who can't, because they're busy, like, being exploited. Like, we have to take our position of privilege, any position of privilege, and, like, understand, like, what do I have to do? What is my, what are the resources that I can use in my community to enact change and defend communities that are being exploited, and defend environmental issues that are being under discussed? Because that way, I think everyone is putting their own part into defending the environmental crisis, in a very collective way.
So this collective action and individual action, you actually founded the $5 Project, which is a nonprofit regarding combating the climate crisis. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so the $5 Project, we're an international movement tackling climate change through youth-led initiatives in communities all around the world. I think we've done stuff in Lebanon, Ecuador, France, United States, more. And I think like the most important part is that the people who have led these projects are people from those communities. A big thing that we focus on is tackling environmental injustice and inequity, and amplifying and empowering communities who have been disproportionately affected by climate change. And when it comes to that, I think we have this really strong goal of empowering communities from within and creating sustainable change that is reflective of their culture, and that is going to be long-term, because it's something that's feasible, that is engaging more people and spreading more awareness about climate change. So I think it's been really fun to work with, like, people from like 46 countries in terms of having new ideas and new projects. We've done everything from beach cleanups to climate literacy webinars to like all sorts of cool stuff. And I think all of it has had the goal of empowering people who participate, and spreading some sort of systemic change through these projects, depending on the environmental issue that we're focusing on through that initiative.
How do you think your work in the $5 Project, which sounds amazing, by the way, big fan of what you do, but how do you think your goals, how are they helpful to combating your own climate anxiety?
I think it gives me a big channel in which to diffuse, and or it gives me a platform where I can channel, as I was saying before, like channel my anxiety into action. Because I know I definitely, when I got anxious about climate anxiety before, I was kind of like, oh gosh, what do I do now? Like, I'm super anxious, but I don't have any action items that I can do right now that are going to help me, you know, relieve this stress and like assure me that things are going to be okay. And I think working with the $5 Project, interacting with people who feel the same way as me, and actually creating like really cool forms of climate action has helped me channel that anxiety into a productive energy where I think like, okay, this is really stressful. Let's do something about it. Let's not just wallow in like pity and despair, which sounds really dramatic, but I think I used to do that a lot. Let's actually just do something about it. So yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with that sort of like wallowing in self-pity. I think we as humans just really enjoy looking back at, well, this is everything that's already went wrong. Can it really go up from here? Like, you know, the sort of existential thing, like, damn, climate change is really close. We haven't done anything about it, so why continue to keep doing it? You know, with the climate clock, you know, the goal is to prevent global warming from reaching a point of no return, right? So this idea of a point of no return is so stressful and so anxiety inducing that taking individual action, that taking collective action, that trying to make a change in your own lifestyle and others' lifestyles, and encouraging a sort of regression on climate change, and knowing that I have done something about this, I have done my part, you have to also do your part. So yeah, and I really liked all of your answers about climate anxiety and individual action and collective action as well, because you intertwined the ideas of individual action being necessary, because if with the tragedy of the commons, if 1,000 individuals do something that disproportionately negatively affects others, then imagine how much greater the impact would be worldwide. Okay, but then also we have to pressure our governments and our corporations, take systemic action, look at your past and look at your future, stop capitalizing off of a tragedy, right? This isn't gonna give you linear growth. This isn't gonna help you long-term look to the future, right? Anyways, with that, we are getting to the end of the episode. So before I leave, are there any books or movies or songs that you would recommend about climate anxiety or climate change overall?
I think something that I really like immersing myself with is I like listening to people who are climate activists, who are intersectional climate activists. There's a lot of people on Instagram that are really cool, like Queer Brown Vegan, or oh my gosh, I'm forgetting everyone now, like intersectional environmentalists. And they're really cool because they come from a diverse set of backgrounds and they share how climate change is impacting them and how you can personally combat climate change through those venues. And I think it's really important. I think social media gives a really big opportunity for people from marginalized backgrounds to share how climate change is impacting them and how they're doing something about it, because it really makes you think like, wow, climate action through a sustainable and culturally sensitive standpoint is possible because these people are doing it and they've been doing it for ages. I think something a lot of people don't recognize is that like indigenous groups have been using land resources for thousands of years and have done it so sustainably and protected the land. And we kind of tend to ignore that, or I think a lot of narratives or like white centered narratives of climate change ignore that, because it's like it's easier to. So I mean that's like a whole other topic, but it's really interesting to hear those people's perspectives. I also like learning about like the history of the earth, because I think it's really important to learn why these resources are so important to us and why we can't just like, you know, create more oxygen. So there's this book called Oxygen by Donald Canfield, and it basically talks about the history of oxygen on Earth. And I think it's really interesting because you see how scientifically like deposits of carbon have been used, and how like fungi and like archaic bacteria, like all of these things have outlived us and are older than us, and they're just like so intertwined. And I think it just like reminds me that nature is ultimately more powerful than any of us are. So we need to make sure that we are preserving that lifeline and that we aren't just extracting and exploiting the resource that it gives us. So yeah.
Yeah, I really like that idea of nature is more powerful than us. The idea that our world has been living for so much longer than we have. We are barely like a speck on the timeline, right? Like, and to destroy that would be a crime. Like, we have to protect it, and it's so beautiful, and the history of the earth is so long, and it's affected us so much. Humans and the environment are so interconnected and intertwined that it's impossible to imagine a life where our world or our earth was different, right? And I totally agree with that idea of like media helping with this intersectionality between climate change and feminism and systemic racism and all of this sort of things, and indigenous activism especially, because it's important that we listen to the words of those who have lived on the land before us, those who have those that understand the land that we live on, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And as for like Instagram, I really like the Bad Activist Collective. I know you said the Queer Brown Vegan. I'm gonna definitely check them out, but I like the Bad Activist Collection because they're super intersectional too, and they talk about a bunch of topics. And then I think there is also a sense of climate humor that can impact us, right? Like climate humor, it takes a sort of, if you can laugh at something, then you have power over it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can own it, you can understand it. So I think looking at climate comedy or forms of climate satire can definitely alleviate stresses, right? And sort of show that we do need to take climate change right now. We do need to take action for it. So finally, before we go, are there any last statements you would like to share with our audience?
I think for anyone who's hearing this or watching this, I think the most important, sorry, my dog is in the background. I think the most important piece of advice, if you take any from this episode, is the fact that you're able to do a change, and you should be doing that change, and you should be doing it in a way that is sustainable and respectful to your growth, because something a lot of activists experience is burnout. Like, we get so nervous, we do so much, we get then again so anxious, and we become so tired that at the end of the day we can't do more, and a lot of people end up being inactive in the environmental movement because they're just so stressed about it, and they're like, it's the very thing we seek to destroy. And it's hard because, I mean, we're all humans, and it's really hard to try to fathom the idea that this is like an existential crisis. So it's really important when you're taking this action to be respectful to yourself, but also channel your anxieties into something more than just fear, and get involved with organizations like the $5 Project, like Zero Hour, 350, environmental movements that are making the right sort of environmental change, that are respecting communities and promoting systemic environmental change. So yeah, you got this.
I like that. I like that. Doing something that's sustainable for yourself. Anyways, that's all we have for today. Thank you to whoever's listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And be sure to follow this podcast on Instagram at icebreaker.podcast and check out icebreakerpodcast.card.co. That's all. Thank you for listening.